Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is CNN Breaking News.
Welcome to our viewers here in the United States and around the world. I'm Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room. We're tracking new evidence that the fall resurgence of the coronavirus that we've been repeatedly warned about is becoming a very dangerous reality. Tonight, much of the country has been plunged into the red zone. The rate of new infections rising right now in 33 states as U.S. deaths hit 215,000 and total cases climb above 7.8 million. And yet, for the second night in a row, the president is heading to a campaign rally with no social distancing and few masks. His supporters in Pennsylvania flouting safety guidelines despite a 63% spike in COVID-19 cases in that state during the past month alone. Also breaking, new setbacks and safety concerns for coronavirus therapies. Eli Lilly pausing a trial right now of its antibody treatment due to illness. This after a second U.S. vaccine trial was suspended because a participant became ill. Let's first go to our White House correspondent, Caitlin Collins. Caitlin, another night, another rally for the president in a state where COVID-19 infections are rising.
They certainly are, Wolf, but that doesn't seem to be something that is on the president's mind as he is attending these rallies, since he now is back on the trail after being at home, after being released from the hospital. And Wolf, some aides around the president were hoping this would be kind of a reset for the president to seem relatable to voters who so far have rejected his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic, since he himself was diagnosed with it. But they are not getting that. And instead, what we heard from the president last night and what sources say we can expect to hear tonight is the same thing that he's been doing for months, which is downplaying the pandemic while mocking those who were taking it seriously.
After his own COVID-19 hospitalization, President Trump is back on the campaign trail tonight in a state where infections are rising.
I feel so powerful. I'll walk into that audience.
The president holding a rally in Pennsylvania after tossing out masks to supporters in Florida who mostly weren't wearing them or social distancing.
I'll kiss the guys and the beautiful women and everybody. I'll just give you a big fat kiss.
Trump's doctor says he's tested negative, though Dr. Conley has stayed away from the cameras for over a week now, leaving his patient to spin his own health while insisting he's immune even though the science is still out.
I went through it. Now they say I'm immune.
White House officials are touting the president's return.
As we saw from last night, he's got his dance moves ready to go in every swing state from now to the election.
But they haven't explained why they'll release some of Trump's test results, but not others.
Why can the president's doctor release his negative result from this week, but he can't?
I'm not going to get into that.
After being forced off the trail, Trump is trying to make up for lost time with rallies in Iowa, North Carolina, Florida, and even Georgia, an unusual stop for a Republican 3 weeks out from the election. Tonight, President Trump is also reviving his criticism of Dr. Anthony Fauci after he objected to being used in one of the president's campaign ads he says took him out of context.
I can't imagine that anybody could be doing more.
Instead of responding to Fauci's request to take that ad down, the president mocked his pitch at a baseball game and said his arm is more accurate than his COVID-19 prognostications. Trump's tweet ignoring how the campaign is using Fauci's likeness to appeal to voters, as Fauci says he won't leave his job over the public presidential dispute.
I'm certainly not going to give up. This is too important a problem. I mean, I've devoted my entire professional life to fighting infectious diseases.
Trump is trailing Joe Biden in many polls, and his support with seniors has been hurt in part by his response to the pandemic. His surrogates, including his daughter, are now claiming he didn't downplay coronavirus early on, but others did.
At a time when most people, you know, except through the lens of revisionist history, most people were not taking it very seriously on the Hill or elsewhere.
I think that's a problem that's going to go away.
Today, Senator Mitt Romney issued a blistering statement about the state of politics in the U.S., saying the world is watching America with abject horror and it's time to lower the heat. Though he singled out Democrats, Romney was especially critical of the president and said many Americans are frightened for our country. So divided, so angry, so mean, so violent.
Now, Wolf, even just 3 weeks to go before the election, some Republicans are trying to give the president free messaging advice, like Senator Chuck Grassley, who tweeted today the president needs to have a card with five things that he's accomplished and five things that set him apart from Joe Biden at the beginning of these rallies, instead of sticking to the usual script that he's had for the last several months. But it's unlikely that will happen. And Wolf, we'll wait to see if the president is actually going to take questions from reporters for the first time, at least from the White House press corps, in some time, when he's about to leave the White House any moment now to go to Pennsylvania.
We'll see if he answers reporters' questions. We'd love his physician to answer reporters' questions as well. It's been more than a week now since he was answering questions, the doctor. All right, Caitlin, thank you very, very much. There's more breaking news we're following in the pandemic. Our CNN national correspondent Erica Hill is in New York for us. Erica, as we're seeing very disturbing trends moving across the United States right now, there's also a setback in the issue of the race for new treatments.
Yeah, that's right. We learned from Eli Lilly today, Wolf, that they are pausing trials with their antibody treatment. This is one that the president has touted. Keep in mind, they've already applied for emergency use authorization with the FDA. In a statement, the company told CNN safety is of the utmost importance, but they didn't give exact reasons for pausing that trial. We should note this is not the antibody treatment that the president took. That one is made by Regeneron, which has also filed for emergency use authorization. But all of these headlines adding up as we continue to see cases, hospitalizations, and deaths rise.
More than 7 months into this pandemic, the U.S. is sliding backwards.
This is going to be a very tough winter. We may see a rise in new cases that exceeds what we saw back in March and April.
33 states now seeing new cases rise over the past week. Nearly half of those also posting their highest seven-day averages for new cases since the pandemic began.
Now is the time to act. Now is the time to do something about it.
COVID-related hospitalizations at record highs in five states. Positivity rates, which ideally should be at 3% or less, are climbing.
We're starting to see a number of states well above that, which is often, and in fact, invariably, highly predictive of a resurgence of cases.
In New York, hefty fines and tickets as the city tries to contain clusters by enforcing masks, limiting gatherings, and closing non-essential businesses.
We're now on day four of the pause in those areas, and we are seeing some results.
It's not just New York clamping down. Across much of Europe, restrictions are returning as new cases and anxiety grow.
Each of the last 4 days has been the highest number of cases reported so far.
Eli Lilly pausing its trial of an antibody treatment today, one touted by the president, telling CNN safety is of the utmost importance, though without offering specifics. Johnson & Johnson just paused phase three of its vaccine trial because of an unexpected illness in one of the volunteers.
To me, it's reassuring that companies are acting responsibly and pausing when they need to.
AstraZeneca's U.S. trials remain on hold pending an FDA investigation. Meantime, in Dallas, a big moment for Major League Baseball.
This is amazing.
Spectators, more than 11,000 allowed in for Game 1 of the NLCS.
It's just great to have baseball fans in the stands again.
The Philadelphia Eagles will welcome a limited number of fans to the stadium this Sunday.
And now we are seeing some signs like we just saw with those major league sports. I have to point out, Wolf, here in New York City, the New York Philharmonic just canceled its entire season through June of 2021 for the first year in its 178-year history. And in New Mexico, the governor said things are not going in the right direction. They're actually rolling back some measures. Starting Friday, bars and restaurants that serve alcohol have to close by 10 o'clock, and mass gatherings limited now to just five people, Wolf.
Very important indeed. All right, Erica Hill in New York, thank you. Joining us now, Dr. Richard Besser, the former acting director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Dr. Besser, thanks so much for joining us. And I want to get to the breaking news right away. The drug maker Eli Lilly pausing trials right now for an experimental antibody treatment after an illness in a volunteer. This is similar to the antibody cocktail treatment that the president credits with his coronavirus recovery, that cocktail treatment coming from Regeneron. Is this a concerning setback, or do you think it's a sign that the system is actually working?
I think it is a sign that the system is working, and it points to the critical importance of doing these kinds of trials and not rushing drugs or vaccines out to general use until we truly know that they're safe and that they work. You know, when one person has an experience with a drug, there can be a sense of wow, we have to get this out to everyone. But until you do a true trial, you don't know whether an individual patient's improvement is from that medication or from something else, and whether it's generally safe. So this is a positive sign.
Let me also get your thoughts on this Johnson & Johnson decision to pause their vaccine trial after an unexplained illness in a volunteer. The second vaccine trial paused in just over a month. What do you make of that decision?
Well, two things. One is, again, it's a sign the system's working. You know, when you have a large trial, there are going to be events that happens in people's lives, and you have to see, are they related to the vaccine or to something else? But it also points out, Wolf, the critical importance of following the lead of public health right now. There's no guarantee that we will have a vaccine that's safe and effective. And if we do, when that will be here. And, you know, as the numbers are going up around the country, we need public health to be in the lead, investigating what's happening in each state and providing guidance in terms of whether anything needs to be rolled back or whether things can proceed as they currently are taking place in different places.
Looking at the big picture, Dr. Besser, it's obvious the U.S. right now, look at all the number, all the data coming in. The U.S. is heading in the wrong direction once again. Just about every indicator is getting worse. So how concerning is it that, especially as we head into the flu season?
Well, you know, this is what everyone in public health has been talking about for months, that as the weather gets cooler, viruses are going to do better. They survive longer in cooler air. They in less humidity, they stay in the air longer. As children go back to school and young adults go to college and businesses open up, the number of cases are going to rise. And public health has to be on top of that, investigating cases, doing contact tracing, providing safe places for people to isolate and quarantine. If they do that, then you can open in a way that is relatively safe. But if people are still fighting over whether you wear a mask and whether you wash your hands and whether you stand 6 feet apart, there's absolutely no way we're going to be able to roll back the kinds of restrictions that people would like to see rolled back. So the challenge here, Wolf, is getting everyone on the same page with following public health. Because when CDC is undermined, every state and local public health department in the nation is undercut as well.
Dr. Fauci says he's especially concerned right now by the rising test positivity rates. Is that a sign of a significant surge potentially in new cases?
Well, it can be. You have to look at the percent positive, but also the number of tests that are being done. And as we've talked about before, you have to break it down further. You have to look by neighborhood, by race, by ethnicity. Because as we know, this pandemic isn't hitting every community in the same way. Black, Latino, Native Americans being hit the hardest, lower income Americans being hit hard, now rural America being hit very hard. And if you're not looking at that level, you could miss major trends and major things that you could intervene and change the course for large parts of the population.
The president is once again attacking Dr. Fauci, tweeting this. He tweeted, Tony's pitching arm is far more accurate than his prognostications. What's your reaction to that attack?
Well, you know, when I was at CDC, I worked very frequently with Dr. Fauci. He is one of the smartest people in public health, and I truly respect his opinion. And I think anything that undercuts people in public health is a disservice to the nation and puts us all at risk. Over the course of a pandemic, recommendations are going to change as you learn more, and that's the norm. But without public health out front leading, explaining what they're learning, then it can look that the changes that you hear, the new guidance, is frivolous or capricious. But it's not. It's based on learning, and that's a good thing.
And all of us are grateful to Dr. Fauci for, what, 5 decades of service to the American people in this one area.
Incredible.
He's really an amazing doctor. Thanks so much, Dr. Besser, for joining us.
Thanks, Wolf.
All right, just ahead, President Trump's apparent desire to be seen as a sort of Superman after his COVID-19 infection. We're going to have the latest on the confirmation hearing also underway for the president's Supreme Court nominee and the questions that Judge Amy Coney Barrett is refusing to answer. Right now, President Trump is heading to Pennsylvania for his second big rally since his coronavirus infection. His supporters in Pennsylvania appearing largely unconcerned about social distancing or mask wearing, as you saw in those live pictures, despite a spike in cases in Pennsylvania right now. We're joined by CNN political analyst Maggie Haberman, the White House correspondent for The New York Times. Maggie, thanks so much for joining us. First of all, I want you to watch what President Trump had to say at his rally last night on recovering from the virus. Listen to this.
I went through it. Now they say I'm immune. I feel so powerful. I'll walk into that audience. I'll walk in there. I'll kiss everyone in that audience. I'll kiss the guys and the beautiful women and everybody. I'll just give you a big fat kiss.
So, Maggie, instead of empathizing with the millions of Americans who've also caught this virus, is he treating all this as a joke?
Look, I think the president views illness as weakness, Wolf, and we know this. We have seen this time and again in how he has handled anything that he sees as akin to weakness. He brushes it off and puts it aside. I understand that he wants to communicate that he's not in ill health, considering that part of his argument against Biden for months has been that Biden, you know, isn't up to the task of being the president. Biden has not caught the virus. They've been releasing the results of his tests, unlike what the president's folks have been doing at the White House. So I'm not surprised that the president is doing it this way. But to your point, it downplays what a lot of people have gone through in dealing with this virus. Instead of saying to people, I faced it, I understand why it's a really difficult virus, why it's a difficult illness, and I understand that I had access to medicine that everyone doesn't. He has said that latter part sometimes, but not consistently, and instead he is trying to turn this into a show of strength. There are a lot of people who are still struggling with it. There are a lot of people who have had the virus who are sick for months afterward. There's no one singular experience that anyone has, and what he's describing is just not typical for a lot of folks.
If that's absolutely true. You, of course, reported that the president actually considered a stunt on his way back from the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland, where he was recovering, spent 4 days there. He actually, according to your reporting, he toyed with the idea of pretending to be frail, then ripping open his shirt to reveal a Superman T-shirt. Was last night's rally the rhetorical equivalent of that?
I think there's something to that, Wolf. I mean, look, I think that we know that he sees his campaign is, I think, selling some kind of T-shirt or some kind of an image that has the president as Superman flying with his arm in front of his head. So it's not surprising. We know that the president likes these kinds of, grand displays that are very theatrical. Maybe last night was part of what he was going for. I think what he was going for was probably something more iconic when he was thinking about doing this. He ultimately decided against it, and he just walked out of Walter Reed like anyone else.
Yeah. Senator Chuck Grassley offered some advice to the president for the next debate, assuming that will happen. He wrote this, I suggest you use pocket card at podium with five short sentences on what you've accomplished, five things that differentiate you from Biden, five things you will accomplish in the next 4 years. Focusing on these simple highlights will help your message, and only take 5 minutes, then say whatever you want. Clearly, the senator doesn't think the president has necessarily made his case so far.
Look, Senate Republicans, Wolf, are looking at a pretty dispiriting landscape right now. You know, they look at the pushback that we always hear from people around Trump is they looked at a dispiriting landscape in 2016 too, and that turned out differently. But at this point, and that may still be the case, although it is worth remembering the president has a record now, and a lot of the circumstances are not the same. So I think it's not a surprise to see Senate Republicans trying to openly plead with this president to do things differently. But what Grassley was arguing was actually, well, not that he do things differently. He said, make points A through C or whatever, and then you can say whatever you want. The president already says whatever he wants. That's part of the problem that his advisors see, is that he is just up there saying whatever he wants to say, and it is not sinking in with the American people. In the meantime, what they're seeing is these images of him at these close-packed rallies at a time when people are scared about this virus still. That's the message he's sending.
The election is exactly 3 weeks from today, but already millions of Americans are voting. More than 10.5 million Americans have already voted. So, Maggie, what's the state of the campaign right now with 3 weeks to go? Is the president feeling concerned at all heading into this final stretch?
Look, the president, reads the public polling like everyone else. We know that he calls it fake polling. We know the campaign says their polling is tighter than what the public polling is. And that may be true. I think that it is very clear that the campaign and some Republican pollsters are polling a different universe of turnout than some of the public polls. And we're not going to know until Election Day what it ultimately looks like. But there's a lot of people voting right now, Wolf, and that is of concern to people around the president, because the president's been having a pretty bad period since early voting started in a number of key states. And there are a number of ballots that have been cast already. So I think you will see the president try to make things turn out the way they did in 2016 by sheer force of will. It's not at all clear that that's going to be enough for him this time.
And there are a lot of nervous Republicans out there, especially in the Senate and the House of Representatives, who have their own political headaches they got to deal with. Maggie Haberman, as usual, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Will.
All right, just ahead, more breaking news on the Senate hearing for the president's U.S. Supreme Court nominee. It's continuing into the night. Are there any surprises? And I'll also ask the New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio about his urgent concerns for the city this week in the fight against new coronavirus clusters. We'll be right back. We're back with the breaking news on a marathon day of questioning for the president's U.S. Supreme Court nominee, Judge Amy Coney Barrett. Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee pressing her for answers they sometimes did not get. Our congressional correspondent, Phil Mattingly, is up on Capitol Hill. Phil, so how has Judge Barrett been doing?
Well, according to Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham, she is still well on track for confirmation before the election, still on schedule based on everything at least the chairman and Republicans have seen over the course of 9 hours today. Now, they're on a dinner break right now, will return shortly. But even the inevitability, is at least it seems at this point, hasn't stopped Democrats from digging in, trying to find out any views they possibly can, most notably on issues like Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, on issues like abortion, and on issues about what might happen should she receive a case on the Supreme Court after the election. Take a listen.
I have the integrity to act consistently with my oath and apply the law as the law, to approach the ACA and every other statute without bias, and I have not made any commitments or deals or anything like that. I'm not here on a mission to destroy the Affordable Care Act. I'm just here to apply the law and adhere to the rule of law. No matter what anyone else may think or expect, I have not committed to anyone or so much as signaled. I've never even written. I've been in a couple of opinions in the Seventh Circuit that have been around the edges of election law. But I haven't even written anything that I would think anybody could reasonably say, oh, this is how she might resolve an election dispute.
So, Wolf, whether it's the Affordable Care Act, which the Supreme Court will take up and potentially invalidate or have the opportunity to invalidate just a few days after the election, or potential election cases kind of across the board, Amy Coney Barrett following precedent to some degree as past nominees, not answering questions about cases that may come up, not delving too deeply into the details. Democrats plan to keep going on the questioning both tonight and tomorrow, but even they seem to acknowledge at this point in time this is a foregone conclusion in terms of the confirmation. But raising those issues to public awareness, that is something they plan to continue to press on throughout the course of the next 2 days.
You know, Phil, Senator Kamala Harris is a member of the Judiciary Committee. Her turn to question the judge for 30 minutes is coming up, I understand, right after this dinner break. What can we expect there?
Yeah, it's a great question, Wolf, and one we've all been trying to figure out. Obviously, we saw Kamala Harris's opening statement yesterday. We've seen her in past Judiciary Committee hearings, including in past Supreme Court nomination hearings, kind of become the interrogator-in-chief in some degree, going viral with some of the questions that have stumped witnesses throughout the course of the last several years on the Judiciary Committee. What will be interesting to watch is Senator Harris is now Vice Presidential Nominee Harris. She's in a different position right now than she was when she was just the sitting senator from California. And how she decides to operate in her 30 minutes of questioning, one thing you can take over the course of the last 9 hours from Democrats is the Affordable Care Act has been a primary focus. The actions of the president, while Amy Coney Barrett has not responded to them, have also been things that have been delved into. So keep an eye on both of those issues, and also keep in mind, she's a former prosecutor. She likes to point that out. She'll have an opportunity for a full 30 minutes.
Wolf. Yeah, it should be a fascinating 30 minutes of questions from her, answers from the judge. We're going to have live coverage coming up here on CNN. I'm anxious to see how that unfolds. All right, thanks very much, Phil, for that. Let's continue the conversation right now with Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat who serves on the Judiciary Committee. He participated in today's Supreme Court confirmation hearing. Senator, thank you so much for joining us. Many of your fellow Democratic colleagues, they're focusing their question on Judge Amy Coney Barrett on the Affordable Care Act. Barrett says she's not hostile to that law. Does that give you any comfort?
No, it does not. There has been too much said about the Affordable Care Act, first by the president, who said he wants to use the litigation that she's being rushed onto the court to participate in to, quote, terminate health care under Obamacare. The Republican Party platform specifically says it wants to reverse the Obamacare cases, and they'll appoint judges who will do that. Over and over again, you have these strong statements of intent, and I think it's important that we take them seriously, and I think it's also important that voters take them seriously. And since they can't hold Judge Barrett accountable, hold accountable the Republican senators who have written briefs saying the Affordable Care Act should be knocked down in the middle of a pandemic, and hold accountable the Republican senators who are voting for the swing vote that might take down the Affordable Care Act in the middle of a pandemic.
Today was the first opportunity for senators on the Judiciary Committee like you to publicly question Judge Barrett, but during your allotted 30-minute time frame, you didn't ask a single question. Why not?
Because I wanted to make the case to the public of something that we've been looking at in the Senate for quite some time, which is the role of big special interest dark money that is circulating around the Supreme Court, that now controls the selection of Supreme Court justices, that pours huge checks, like a $17 million donation, into funding TV ad campaigns to support the nominees, and then to show how the same groups fund artificial front groups that turn up before the court to file briefs as if they were separate, but it's an orchestrated chorus funded by the same interests that are putting their people on the court. There's some real problems at the Supreme Court, and I think if we just look at what's happening in this puppet theater of a judiciary hearing, we're disserving the American people.
Judge Barrett repeatedly insisted she does not and will not allow her personal and her religious beliefs to affect her U.S. Supreme Court decisions, assuming she'll be confirmed. You take her at her word.
Everybody says that in these hearings. It's become so rote that it's almost automatic. They say that they'll follow precedent. They say they won't let their personal views intrude. They say that they are simply going to read the law and follow it and recite what it says. It is the confirmation hearing equivalent of pabulum, baby food. It's not meaningful.
Yeah, almost all of the nominees for the U.S. Supreme Court, whether nominated by a Democratic president or a Republican president, have uttered the same line over and over again during these confirmation hearings. Senator Whitehouse, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Just ahead, I'll speak with the New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. As he says, New York City is entering a decisive week in its fight against the new coronavirus clusters. Plus, more on those massive lines at polling stations across Texas and Georgia, with some voters facing lines that are hours and hours long. We'll be right back. The mayor of New York says the city's battle against the new COVID clusters is entering a decisive week as it limits gatherings and closes non-essential businesses in those areas to prevent a much-feared full resurgence of the coronavirus. Let's discuss with the mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio. Mayor de Blasio, thank you so much for joining us. I know you have a lot going on. When you say this will be, in your words, a decisive week for New York City, explain precisely what you mean.
Yeah, look, Wolf, the most important thing I can say is there's a threat of a second wave, but I am absolutely convinced we can stop a second wave from happening here in New York City. We've had a set of neighborhoods where we've seen increases. We've put really strong restrictions in place, a lot of outreach in those communities, a lot of testing, a lot of enforcement. I believe we can contain the situation. And even if we see it crop up in some other neighborhoods, we have the pieces in place to contain it. But this is the week we have to do it. This is the week where we have to turn the tide and make sure there is not a second wave, because Lord knows this city was the epicenter, and we will not let that happen again. So it's really about everything we're throwing at it this week coming to its full impact and engaging the people intensely. That's what we keep learning. If the people are bought into the solution, that's what makes the difference. And I really think New Yorkers realize everyone has to participate at this point to stop a second wave.
Yeah, these are life and death decisions. Mayor, what's the situation like now in what you call those red zone cluster areas?
Well, we've seen some leveling off in the test data. And, you know, we are very devoted here in New York City to the data and the science. This is what helped us fight our way out of being the epicenter. And we had, you know, three or four very good months because we stayed devoted to the actual facts, and we're doing it again now. So the facts tell us, Wolf, that a week or so ago, things were trending very much in the wrong direction in a set of neighborhoods. Not by any means the majority of the city, a small part of the city, but still a very, very big area of concern. The last few days, the data, we see some leveling off. We see some improvement. We are not out of the woods, but something is starting to work. And people are coming out and getting tested in much bigger numbers. And that's a crucial piece of the equation.
The city, I understand, handed out, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, about $150,000 in fines over the weekend. Is that the type of enforcement it's going to take to keep things under control through this fall surge?
Yeah, look, it's never something you want to do. Everyone's been through a tough time, humanly, economically. We don't want to give fines. We don't have to. But people have to see there are consequences. So we've had some very powerful enforcement efforts. They are being duly noted in all the communities affected. And hopefully by showing that that is a real possibility, the vast majority of people are never going to get to the point where they need a fine. What we are seeing is many more people now wearing masks and taking social distancing seriously. And we need to make sure that sticks, because we got to stop a second wave from happening and then keep it at bay for the long term until we have a vaccine.
You say, Mayor, that the testing across New York City public schools is very encouraging, but the school year got off, I understand, to a rather rocky start. What are you hearing from administrators, from teachers, from parents right now?
So first of all, the testing is a very good story, Wolf. I mean, a week ago in New York City, we had the highest week of testing in the city's history since this began. Over 250,000 New Yorkers got tested. That number, I want to keep going higher and higher every week. In the schools, we've had a huge testing effort. And what we've seen consistently is very, very low numbers. We had almost 2,000 folks tested on Friday in 56 schools. We got one positive back. So that's really encouraging. It did take us a few weeks to get the school year going, but now it's going full bore all over the city. You know, we have 1,600 schools, and except for some temporarily closed in those particular zones, the vast majority are up and running and running well. So the schools have been a positive point. Very few examples of tests that are giving us the wrong indicator in the school. We're getting overwhelmingly good results from testing in schools.
Well, that's encouraging to hear that. As you point out, and as you well know better than anyone, New York City was the epicenter of this crisis back in April. How confident are you, big picture right now, Mayor, that your city will avoid a repeat this fall and winter as the weather gets colder and colder and the regular flu season begins to really disrupt things as well?
I am confident, Wolf. We have a huge campaign to get everyone to get the flu shot. We have the strongest test and trace core in the country. That's a huge X factor in our favor. The vast majority of New Yorkers really are observing social distancing and wearing those masks. So we have a challenge ahead, but I feel very good that if we keep doing what we're doing, we can contain this current outbreak, push it back, stop a second wave now. And then, you know, with everything we've learned, hold this virus at bay during the cold weather months. New Yorkers are ready to come back and make the city strong and vibrant again. And so I think people are really bought into the fact that it's up to all of us to follow these rules, to be governed by the data and the science, so we can get out of this challenge once and for all. But right now, I see people doing the right thing to help us beat this back and avoid a second wave.
So many people are suffering in New York City right now. The unemployment rate is huge. People are desperate. They can't pay the rent. They need food. They got to put food on the table for their kids. How important is it that the Democrats and the Republicans in the House and the Senate get their act together and pass an economic stimulus package that will help all those folks in New York City right now?
Wolf, it's the only way we truly restart this city and restart our economy and bring people's livelihoods back. We must have that stimulus package. Right now, we are depending, on what little we have to keep basic services going for people and to give us the possibility of the restart people need. But at some point, if we don't get that federal support soon, we're not going to be able to provide the basic services as a city. We're not going to be able to give people what they need to be able to restart their businesses. There are so many people who have suffered, but with a little bit of timely federal help, this could be a very different story. This could be the story of rebirth. And I got to believe at some point, maybe it's going to take an election to do it, Wolf, but at some point soon, Washington will focus its energies and get us the support we deserve.
Yeah, it's a critical moment indeed for so many millions of Americans out there. Mayor de Blasio, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to everyone in New York.
Thank you, Wolf.
Just ahead, Senator Kamala Harris, the Democratic vice presidential nominee, is set to grill Judge Amy Coney Barrett just a few minutes from now. We're going to have live coverage of that. Stay with us. With Election Day here in the United States just 3 weeks away from today, more than 10.5 million Americans have already cast their general election ballots. And in Georgia, voters are again braving long lines at polling stations throughout the state. CNN's Amara Walker is at a polling location in Fulton County, Georgia, for us. Amara, how bad have the lines actually been there?
Hey there, Wolf. Well, if you think waiting in line to cast your vote for 3 hours is bad, then yeah, it got pretty bad here at this Fulton County polling site at the Buckhead Library. In fact, it was actually worse just about 30 minutes north of here in Gwinnett County, where the maximum wait time today was 6 hours. But, you know, all in all, I've been talking to the voters, and they were in great spirits. They were fired up, so to speak, telling me that, you know, they know that the stakes are high, especially considering that Georgia has become a presidential
battleground. We want to go to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Kamala Harris is just beginning questioning of the U.S. Supreme Court nominee. Let's listen in to Senator Kamala Harris and Judge Amy Coney Barrett.
Thank you.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.